We're doing our class on the Jewish home, and tonight we're going to take a few minutes to discuss how we can strengthen the connection that couples have. You guys are all young, and one day you'll be married 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, and you'll see that certain things that you take for granted when you start dating, when you first get engaged, or when you first get married, suddenly become fantasy when you're married. You think they're a reality, you think you'll be able to hold on to that reality, and then it becomes very difficult to maintain that reality. You think that you'll be able to joke together, to talk and share thoughts and feelings and dreams and aspirations and hopes. And when you meet up with real life, suddenly it becomes very difficult to find the time to do that. You find the time to argue. You find the time to disagree. That happens naturally. But to find the time to develop and to share and to connect doesn't happen naturally. And so it is very important that we create that time. We have to create positive experiences. We have to create time for being together. There's a couple that the wife once commented that they go out on an expensive date once a week. They pay 150 to 200 shekel for a lunch together. And the wife said, well, we checked out the option of therapy, and the cheapest therapist costs 400 shekel or more, so it's cheaper than therapy. And so that's an interesting attitude, you know. The truth is that if couples would be careful to take once a week, aside from Shabbos, to have time alone together, their relationship would look different. It doesn't happen on its own. A person has to create it. And you could create it. You have to give it a top importance. Again, at this stage of life, it seems like something so easy and obvious. But when you start having to pay bills and dealing with children and going to PTA and taking kids to doctors and getting kids shoes and dealing with all the little needs that kids have and families have, you can very easily find yourself running through life without finding an opportunity to talk to one another. So some people will tell you, send emails, send SMSs. And I say, create the time, force yourself to have the time. There has to be time when you could shut the cell phone. There has to be time when you have a very important meeting, and that meeting is to sit alone with your spouse and ensure that you have a relationship. It can very easily evolve to a point where you don't have a relationship. What you have is a partnership. You do this, I'll do that. You do this, I'll do that. Does this work for you? Does that work for you? And the relationship evaporates. In order to have a relationship, we have to foster it. We have to invest in it. We have to take time. The key is taking time. It's not only about quality time, it's about quantity time. And a person will say, but I have to pay my bills. And I'll say, there are much bigger bills if you don't take the time to foster the relationship. And it has to be a priority. You will see that life takes every free minute. And it will come at the expense of other things. Sometimes you won't be able to go to a wedding. You won't be able to go to a bris. But you know what? You will be creating your own home. Yes, it will come at the expense of other things. It must come at the expense of other things. Because life is busy. But you have to create that time. So number one, recommendation number one, if we want to strengthen the connection, is to have time once a week other than Shabbos, where couples have alone time without children. Preferably, you go to sleep beforehand. You get a good night's rest the night before so you could come awake. Embellish the time together. Get dressed up nicely. I'm just going out with my wife. No, you're going out with your wife. Get dressed up. Take a shower. Take a shave. Come prepared. That's that thing that throws water at you. Yeah. Get dressed nicely. I'm saying you can create the atmosphere. Now, a date doesn't have to be expensive. You can buy fresh bread, tuna, a few vegetables. You slice them. You go out to a park. You sit together. You make a little picnic. What did it cost you, 25 shekel? A can of tuna is 7 shekel, a loaf of bread, fresh bread tastes very good. A loaf of bread is what? Also 6.5, 7 shekel, you're at 14 shekel, a few vegetables. For 25 shekels, you've covered yourself. You slice your vegetables, you make a delicious sandwich, you sit down, you make yourself, you make your wife. Okay, you can add a little bit of mayonnaise if you want to your tuna. You made tuna salad. How much did that cost? I'm saying for 25 shekel, you can make a delicious sandwich, a few sandwiches, and have a nice date together. People think a date has to cost 200 shekel at the fanciest restaurant. A date is about creating the time, creating the atmosphere. It's important to invest the time, invest in the embellishments. Prepare a nice suite for your wife on the way. Prepare a nice note beforehand. Say thank you afterwards. Tell her you enjoyed the time. Yes, guys. Tell her you enjoyed the time. That means, thank you. I really enjoyed the time we spent together. But it seems unnatural, a guy will say. And I'll say, right, you'll learn to talk that way. Trips. It's important to go to trips in nature. Different people have different desires. Some people want to go for a trip in a car with air conditioning where there are no bugs. And that's the only way they want to go on a trip. Other people want to go out into nature and get dirty and go on hikes. To each his own. Find the meeting ground and have trips together. Trips without children. You need time alone. Children are important and trips with children are important. But you want to foster the relationship, you have to have time alone. And being in nature alone creates levels of connection that you can't have walking in the middle of Ben Yehuda or by the Kotel. When you're alone in nature, something happens. Touch. Men will often think that touch is a prelude to more touch and intimacy and romance. No, touch is important irrespective of romance. Touch. Now, not only in the bedroom. It's very important that there's touch, affectionate touch between couples in a modest way. We don't do it in front of the kids, but there has to be touch outside the bedroom. Touch that doesn't necessarily lead to other things. When I learn with chatanim, I often tell them, if you're sitting for dinner together, why don't you hold hands? Why aren't your knees touching? I'm not talking about romance. I'm talking about simple touch. It has to be there. There has to be a show of affection that's ongoing between a couple. Now, obviously, when kids are around, so we have to be modest. But we still have to find the ways of showing affection on a steady basis. Yes?
I want more further understand why more religious couples are not affectionate in front of their kids.
I think that people are affectionate in front of their kids in a modest way. I think affection can be shown in many ways.
And why are they affectionate through touch?
It depends on which touch. I think that we usually view, if you take a baby, you hug him, you kiss him, you smother him, you caress him, so that act has nothing to do with romance, right? But if you would do the same thing with your wife, then it is. It should be romantic, right? That type of affection, we leave for the bedroom, we leave for a modest environment. We believe that things that are valued are done in private. Most often when people will publicize their affection, it's not because they feel it so sincerely. When you cherish something, you don't have to show other people. On the contrary, you're not interested in showing other people. It's special because it's private. When couples show their affection publicly, I often question if they're on the bus and they're doing all these immodest acts of love. I often wonder, when they walk into the house, are they still all over one another? Are they doing the same thing? And I think I know the answer. And I think that that shows a lot about what's really going on between them. And again, I think the facts bear this out. Real affection doesn't have to be publicized. On the contrary, a person feels more comfortable when his affection is private. And part of what we're trying to teach children is that connection does not involve showing other people your intimacy. It should be obvious to children that parents love one another. Even though parents will unfortunately sometimes quarrel in front of the kids, even though parents shouldn't and they should try to avoid it, but sometimes it happens. Parents have to be careful to express their reconciliatory tones in front of the kids as well. Children have to hear that parents are at peace. Children have to hear in the way that parents talk to one another that they love, respect, adore one another. And usually children know very, very well what you think of your spouse. Children sense it. They really know what's going on in the house. It's important to try and show it, again, in a modest way, but you'll be surprised how accurately children can gauge what spouses are thinking of one another, and very often children can sense what the spouses themselves don't even sense. You'll see. Your kids will surprise you. Your spouse might not even sense what you're feeling, and your children will. Yes? So I'll put it succinctly, okay? I think that the approach one should have is that in a modest setting, if one is sitting down for dinner and it's only the couple sitting together, or the couple is sitting, as we discussed earlier, after the children are sleeping Friday night and they sit down for tea together or to talk together, so then any opportunity a person has to show his affection in speech or in touch should be used. So obviously, if a person needs his hands to cut his chicken, shouldn't say, just give me that hand. Come, let's just cut the chicken together, right? That's not the idea. But when it's natural, so then very often men tend to overlook this, that touch is not only a function of the bedroom, but touch should be a part of the relationship in as much as is modestly possible. The more the better. Or like I tell chatanim, every time you show your affection in speech or in touch, you're performing a mitzvah. You're making your wife feel good. Why would you give up on an opportunity? So again, I would like to think that it'll come naturally to a person. And a person only has to have his eyes opened to this idea. But sometimes people need the encouragement that it's a mitzvah. So fine, so do it because it's a mitzvah. It is. You know, you're making her happy. And hopefully you're also making yourself happy. And this idea of touch is very underrated. Men tend to forget this. To the male mind, touch is a prelude. And it's not a goal, but rather a means. When in fact, touch is a goal in its own right. The idea of touch, the idea of connection, again, in a modest way, not in front of other people, is important. Everyone needs it. And it strengthens the bond between the partners. You know, the Gemara assumed that when you're passing a dish, when you're passing an item to your spouse, as you pass it, your fingers will caress one another as you pass it from one another. That's one of the reasons why Chazal forbade passing things from one to the other during the period when couples are prohibited. Because it's assumed that if you have an opportunity to gently caress your spouse as you're passing an item, why would you forgo that? So we have many examples of this. I just gave one. But again, these are not big acts. They're small acts. But the small acts carry a big weight. And we're going to conclude with a point which is, again, slightly counterintuitive. And that's the idea of giving compliments. You'd think it's obvious, but it isn't. All human beings find it difficult to give compliments. And the reason is because we feel threatened. We lack the self-esteem to be able to give hearty approbation, to be able to say, you're amazing. What you did is great. And if we train ourselves, then with time, we can develop this skill of giving compliments, of showing true appreciation. Very often, people are not good at accepting compliments. You tell someone, you made a wonderful meal, and they'll tell you it was nothing, and you'll just smile and keep eating. What the other party is really saying is, tell me more. Mm-hmm. You come home and say, you cleaned the house amazingly. This looks like a new house. And your wife says, oh, it was nothing. What she's saying is, argue with me, tell me more. Mm-hmm. She might not realize that's what she's saying, but that's what she's saying. But the male reaction is, you're right, it wasn't that dirty. That's not the right reaction. But again, it's a habit. We're not good at it. Again, left to our own inclination, we will not be good at giving compliments. A person has to develop this skill. And this is really a class in its own right. The idea of giving compliments is very important, firstly, because we all thirst for it. Secondly, because it is the building blocks of marriage. Meaning, you want to build your marriage, give compliments. You want to build your marriage, give compliments. You want to build your marriage, give compliments. It is the building blocks of marriage. We all yearn to be appreciated. So this is one of the cardinal rules. An added benefit to giving compliments is that we start to appreciate us men and women too, but primarily us men. We have this great weakness of taking things for granted. I told you guys the story of Suda Shlishit. No, so remind me next week. We'll begin with compliments and Suda Shlishit. I want to end on time. Yes.
How in this week's parsha? How can we understand Yaakov's actions where, seemingly in front of other people, randomly he walks up and kisses Rachel?
That's a great question, which has nothing to do with this class.
Well, you were talking about modesty and affection.
Ah, so it does have to do with this class.
How does he know that she's before? And,
Okay.
We can wait for another time.
Tomorrow night we'll have a parsha class.
It's been bothering me for the last 2 days.
Okay, so in a nutshell, how old was Rachel?
She's young.
I knew that it would be
Number one, Rachel was a little girl. Number two, it was acceptable in those times that there were two types of kisses. There was a kiss that was mouth-to-mouth, which was only done between people who were really close. And then there was a kiss like they do in England where you kiss someone's hand, which was considered a sign of courtesy from a distance, especially for a little girl. Remember, he's a 60-something-year-old man. She's about 4, 5, 6 years old. She's a little girl. This was considered, and the Ibn Ezra comments on this, and the Malbim comments on this, and other places in Tanakh, that when you have the term Vayishak Le, he kissed to, not he kissed the person, but rather he kissed to the person, that's a sign of distance. It's a sign of respect, where they would, like a kiss from a distance, like to kiss one's hand, it was a sign, like the nobles had a custom back then. So that's one of the answers that's offered. And again, if you look through Tanakh, you'll see there are two terms for kissing. And the Rishonim, the Ibn Ezra pointed out, and others point out that they connote two different types of relationships. But there are other answers in the Medrash Rabbah, and there's more to be discussed.
Make sure I guess.